You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Duncan, in for Beth Ruyak. Last Friday, the federal government published a major report on climate change that was all but buried by the Thanksgiving holiday. The latest from the National Climate Assessment paints a dire picture for the U.S. economy in face of the global climate change, including an increase in devastating and deadly wildfires like the one in Butte County. And it runs counter to much of what the Trump administration has been proclaiming. Joining us today to dissect it all, political junkie Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, Beth. I mean Beth.
The other Beth.
Right, the other Beth.
Ken, good morning. This latest report is something else. I mean, it's a huge deal. I'm not sure how many people read it over the weekend.
Well, of course, you make a very good point. It was almost buried by being delivered the day after Thanksgiving for a Saturday newspaper that most people don't get Saturday newspapers. The administration did everything it can to bury the news, but the news is big. Considering the fact that there are very dire economic and environmental risks to what's going on with climate change, and these are things, of course, that the Trump administration has either poo-pooed or ignored for the past 2 years.
One thing that caught my eye when I read it were the dates. We're talking about the 2022?
Right, or the end of the century, which is about 81, 82 years from now when you and I will be in our, I guess, 90s or so. But I mean, but it's much closer than we expect, because they're talking about that what the consequences of climate change, which, as I said, the Trump administration has kind of poo-pooed for the past 2 years. 10% of the U.S. economy would be hard hit by what's going on with the economy, with the environment and the climate. And so we're talking about what's going on with the horrific fires in California and the crop failures in the Midwest and the floods in the Southeast and all that's going on. And we're talking about, is it only going to get worse, which is the most remarkable thing about this is this was put out by a government that basically, you know, argues that pollution isn't so terrible, that more car emissions and more power plants and more coal emissions are not the worst thing in the world. And if anything, they'll help the economy. So you have a government that doesn't believe in climate change, at the same time reading a report that shows dire risks to the economy and to the health of the country and to the environment of the country by century's end.
Was there any official response from the administration?
Nothing I saw. You know, nothing I saw. I mean, of course, this came out Saturday morning. I haven't seen anything today. I know the president today is leaving for a campaign trip to Mississippi in advance of tomorrow's Senate race there. And we could talk about that as well. But I have not seen anything. The only thing I've seen is from scientists who say that this is really, really important stuff and serious stuff. And we ignore it at our peril. And yet you still have a government that talks about taking the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, you know, regarding carbon emissions. And so it seems like everybody realizes the importance and how crucial this report is, except for the folks who are running the government.
So, Ken, next subject, Nancy Pelosi. Let's talk about her whipping votes and bargaining. She's made inroads with younger House members by offering them apparently newly created spots in the leadership. What is the latest on that scene?
Well, you know, something that's interesting. We know that a lot of Democrats who were running for election in this year's election, especially in more conservative red states, red districts, said they would under no circumstances vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker, and not because she's 78 years old, not because she's been in the leadership for 15 years, but she is a favorite Republican target. They love to run against her. But if Nancy Pelosi were so toxic, so politically toxic, as some people were claiming, would the Democrats have done as well as they did on November 6th and the days after with all the subsequent recounts and victories? The Democrats look like they picked up anywhere between 38 and 40, a net gain of 38 to 40 House seats with Nancy Pelosi in charge. So you know, methinks that the threat to her. To her political future is overrated, especially what happened this week We saw, I guess it was last Sunday, maybe it was last Sunday, that some 16 Democrats signed a petition saying they will not vote for Pelosi under any circumstances. The one Democrat who was thinking of running against her, Marsha Fudge, a Democrat from Cleveland, has since said that because Nancy Pelosi promised her certain things like about vote suppression and minority voting and things like that, she will now support Pelosi for Speaker. Brian Higgins, who's a Democrat from Buffalo, New York, said that just a few days ago that, and he was one of the 16 who signed the petition. He was also promised some things from Pelosi, and he said he too will now support her bid for Speaker. So whatever you want to say about Nancy Pelosi, whatever criticisms there are about her, and there have been quite a few, nobody can ever underestimate her power, her willingness to deal, her ability to deal. And for that reason alone, I think she will be the next Speaker of the House.
So there's not very many holdouts left, is what you're telling me.
Well, the number is getting fewer and fewer. And again, even those who didn't sign the petition, those who promised not to vote for her, they may not vote for her. But there are two elections coming up. There's one this week within the Democratic caucus. And maybe those Democrats will be free to vote for somebody else or not vote for her. And then when she will become the Democratic, so-called Democratic nominee for Speaker, and the vote is between her and Kevin McCarthy on January 3rd, when the new Congress comes back, well, these Democrats could say, look, I fulfilled my obligation. I voted for against her in committee, you know, in conference among the Democrats. She's now our nominee and I will support her. So I think this week it's interesting that big opposition that once upon a time these renegades were talking about has really fizzled to maybe a dozen or so. I mean, there may be some more who vote against her, but again, I don't think her path to the speakership or her return path to the speakership is in jeopardy.
Turning to the caravan news, the caravan issue was kind of knocked off the front page for a short time, but the U.S. closed a major border crossing at San Ysidro over the weekend. There is a stretch of unfenced border separating U.S. California and Baja California a few miles inland. What can you tell me about what's happening with that?
Well, it was in the front page news, Beth, because Donald President Trump wanted it to be a campaign issue, and he tried to fire up his base by saying that, you know, the M13s and the gangs and the Muslims are coming to invade the country from the south, going through Mexico, from Central America through Mexico into California. So it was exciting. Once the election was over, we didn't hear anything. But now that many of these migrants have reached or come close to the border with the United States, there is more and more, I guess, you know, efforts for confrontation. And then we saw some confrontation over the weekend when several dozen or some 300 people, I don't know exact number, try to evade the Mexican police and storm the border and try to get through around, you know, into San Diego. And the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol police fired tear gas at these protesters and it dispersed the crowd. But, you know, the thought of, I mean, Donald Trump will talk about these murderers and rapists and gangsters and criminals who were trying to breach our borders. And many of the photographs we saw were just, you know, mothers and their children, their barefoot children, some wearing nothing more than T-shirts and diapers, were being dispersed by tear gas. So it's right now it's an uncertain future what happens to these people. But what it looks like that, you know, in the attempt to shut the border, which they did for several hours, it seems like that a lot of these migrants will just have to stay in Mexico and wait their turn to apply for asylum in the U.S., which they're allowed to do. As a matter of fact, law says they're certainly allowed to do it, but Donald Trump will do everything he can to stall the process or make it more difficult than ever.
It's going to be a long-term story for sure. Ken, let's switch gears one more time as we have a few more minutes. Senator Kamala Harris's seat on the Senate Judiciary Committee might be in jeopardy as the GOP expands their majority. Can you address that for us?
Well, this is what happened. Look, the Republicans picked up a net gain of 2 seats in the Senate. So therefore, the committee ratios can change. They may be able to gain a seat. The Republicans gain a seat on committees such as the Senate Judiciary Committee. And when they do that, the Democrats would lose a seat. The most junior member of the Senate Judiciary Committee is one of its rising stars, Kamala Harris, who certainly has 2020 presidential ambitions. And she, according to many people, was the star Democrat in the Kavanaugh hearing. So it's very possible that she would be forced off the committee unless she can convince Mitch McConnell to expand the committee to allow her to stay, which is very unlikely to happen, or if she can convince a more senior Democrat to leave the committee and move on to some other committee so she can stay on. Now, there's no guarantee that she'll be forced off, but even if she is forced off, look, everybody knows who Kamala Harris is. I don't think she has to be on the Judiciary Committee to make a difference, make an impact in politics. But given the fact that we're going to probably have a contentious debate over the next Attorney General's confirmation, perhaps another Supreme Court justice nomination in the upcoming future, Judiciary Committee is the place to be. And again, for those who think that Kamala Harris has a national ambitions in front of her, perhaps as early as 2020, that's the way she would want to be. But if she's forced off, that's just politics as usual.
All righty, Ken. Good to talk with you. Happy holidays to you.
To you too, Beth. And thanks for being the new Beth. Are you the good Beth or the bad Beth? You know, there's always good cops and bad cops. I want to know who the good Beth is and the evil Beth is.
That's yet to be decided, Ken.
Okay, gotcha. Sorry.
That is political junkie Ken Rudin. Thank you, Ken, for being on Insight. We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.